Welcome to the Red Zone.
The Red Zone.
With Soren Petro. An exclusive presentation of KCChiefs.com. For the next 60 minutes, this is your in-depth, inside look at the Kansas City Chiefs. Now, here's your host, Soren Petro.
Good afternoon and welcome. You're in the Red Zone here at KCChiefs.com. Soren Petro with you on a Wednesday, a victory Wednesday. The Chiefs 3-0 now on the season after a huge 31-10 win over the San Francisco 49ers, a 31-10 win that was not that close. Says a lot when you beat a football team and they make coaching changes the next day. The 49ers, unfortunately, firing former offensive coordinator Jimmy Ray, former Chiefs offensive coordinator Jimmy Ray, and what was now former offensive coordinator for the 49ers, Jimmy Ray, let go after the game. The Chiefs, a dominating performance, really 31-3. Timeouts late to get a superfluous 7 points on the board, maybe even costing the 49ers one of their wide receivers as an injury occurred to Morgan late in the game. But 49ers pulled it within 21 for the final score, 31-10 the final, and a dominant game. We'll talk to Mitch Holthus about that game and the first three games of the season for the Kansas City Chiefs as they head into a bye week before going to Indianapolis and to Houston. Mitch Holthus, voice of the Kansas City Chiefs, will be with us in our next segment and for the next couple of segments. As we love our conversations with Mitch Holthus, great football mind, as we'll talk to him coming up next and talk about this team. Let's talk a little bit more about beating the Niners. A dominant performance on both sides of the ball, the likes I have not seen. This kind of coaching whitewash, I don't know if ever in my life. Just an absolutely fantastic performance. The Chiefs winning in all three phases of the game, dominating from a coaching standpoint and getting an easy victory and an easy week to enjoy being undefeated. One of only three teams after last night, the Green Bay Packers falling to the Bears. The Bears, Steelers, and Chiefs, the only three undefeated teams left in the NFL. Just a fantastic performance for the Chiefs. Now, what does 3-0 mean for the Kansas City Chiefs? Well, since 1993, since they went to the 12-team playoff version, four division winners and two wild cards, since that point, and actually I think it was even 3-3 initially, then went to the four divisions with two wild cards, 79 of 105 teams that have gone 3-0 have made the playoffs. So the Chiefs are now in the 75% range in making the playoffs. Now, you don't have to look far on teams that didn't make it. Two teams last year are in that group of what would it be, 26 teams that didn't make it, and that's the Broncos that started all the way out at 6-0 and the Giants who started at, I believe, 4-0 before they lost a ball game, and neither one of them ended up making the playoffs. So it is not a guarantee. As I said, 26 teams didn't make it, but 79 of 105, which is good for 75%, of the teams, just over 75% of the teams, have made the playoffs when starting 3-0 since 1993. So a very important statistic. You get off to a great start, makes it that much easier to be a playoff football team, and the Chiefs have done it. Another thing that's interesting, and we're very early, these numbers are very early with only three games to judge by, but we talked a lot in the offseason about what the average Super Bowl team looks like, and we talked about how many points they scored and how many yards they gained, where the Chiefs needed to make up ground as far as getting more points on the board or not allowing as many points. The average Super Bowl team, we'll just talk about points today, basically wins games 25-17, 24.8-17.4. That's the average score of every game for the Super Bowl champions since 2002, since we got to the current 32-team format. So that's a difference of 7.4 points. Right now, the Kansas City Chiefs are 3-0 in winning games. Now, again, losses are obviously going to water these numbers down because you're not going to outscore your opponents. All of these Super Bowl teams had losses with the exception of the New England Patriots. They all had losses, and they got outscored in those losses. So the Chiefs have not absorbed any losses yet, which will clearly water down these numbers. But through three games, I think it's exciting to say at least they're starting to look more like a Super Bowl team. They're outscoring their opposition. Average score, 22.7 to 12.7. That's a 10-point differential. 7-8 points is the average differential of your Super Bowl champions. Right now, the Chiefs are winning by an average of 10 points. 7, 2, and then 21. They're winning by an average score of, we'll call it 23 to 13, and a 10-point differential. They're making progress. We'll see where they are after a loss. We'll see where they are after some more wins, get a better feel for it. But the early numbers, the Chiefs starting to look more like what at least a playoff team looks like and even what Super Bowl teams look like as well. And then one other statistic, 2005 Saints, the only other team to lose 10 games in 1 year. The only other team going back through 2002 since the current 32 format to lose 10 or more games 1 year and go 3-0 to start the next year. How did that Saint team finish up? They would go on to be 5-1 and finish the year at 10-6 and win the NFC South and make their way all the way to the NFC Championship game. That was the first year under Sean Payton as the head coach of the New Orleans Saints. We know how that team would go on to progress. 6, 7, 8, and then finally in 2009, Super Bowl champions. But the Saints, 10-plus losses, 3-13 actually, turned it around, went 3-0, ultimately finished 10-6, won their division, and found themselves in the NFC Championship game, ultimately losing to the Chicago Bears, who go on to the Super Bowl and lose to the Colts. But good news, the statistics starting to look the way of the Kansas City Chiefs. Those numbers, all those numbers, very impressive for the Kansas City Chiefs. We'll take a break. When we come back, Mitch Holthus, the voice of the Chiefs, will be with us.
The Red Zone with Soren Petro will be right back here on KCChiefs.com.
Every Sunday, a city of more than 2 million unites. A community of fans thousands strong anticipates. A team of 53 players charges the field.
It's a sweep left of the fullback. And a great block. Springs him to the outside. He's up the left sideline.
And one grocery store is proud to support them all.
20. He's going to outrace everyone to the end zone. Touchdown, Kansas City!
Hy-Vee, an official sponsor of the Kansas City Chiefs. A Kansas City Chiefs fan, they'll tailgate just about anywhere. And they live to hear the three most important words ever.
With Hy-Vee's weekly tailgate specials, you'll find everything you need for your next Chiefs tailgate or Chiefs party. Stop into Hy-Vee and stock up with new tailgate specials every week.
Hy-Vee, an official sponsor of the Kansas City Chiefs.
Big 12 college football action returns to Kansas City in 2010. Tickets are on sale now to see the Kansas State Wildcats take on the Iowa State Cyclones Saturday, September 18th at the new Arrowhead Stadium. The 2009 battle at Arrowhead featured the Wildcats blocking the Cyclones' game-tying extra point with 32 seconds left to preserve the one-point victory. Tickets start at just $20 and are available at the new Arrowhead Stadium box office, Ticketmaster.com, or any Ticketmaster outlet. Head coach Paul Rhodes and his Cyclones look to start the Big 12 conference season off right as they face off against the Wildcats and head coach Bill Snyder for the second year in a row at Arrowhead Stadium. Great seats are available in all levels and start at only $20. Get your tickets now at the new Arrowhead Stadium box office, Ticketmaster.com, or any Ticketmaster outlet. It's the K-State Wildcats and Iowa State Cyclones. When Big 12 college football returns to the new Arrowhead Stadium Saturday, September 18th.
It is time for a new era with new vision and new hope. This is the 2010 Kansas City Chiefs, a team on the rise with the opening of the new and improved Arrowhead Stadium. It's got a new body, but still has the same soul. A team with electrifying young talent.
Charles on his feet, left side angle, cutback, 15, 10, 5, touchdown, Jamal Charles.
A team focused, disciplined, and determined under the direction of head coach Todd Haley.
Just do your job! And we'll win this game! And the Chiefs put the hammer down!
Now is the perfect time to be part of the energy and excitement of one of the best atmospheres in the NFL.
And this kick is good! Ryan Suckup wins the game in overtime!
The party starts this August. Lock down your season tickets now by going to kcchiefs.com. Experience the new Arrowhead Stadium. New body, same soul.
Now, let's get back into the Red Zone with Soren Petro, exclusively on KCChiefs.com.
All right, welcome back. It is the Red Zone here on KCChiefs.com. Soren Petro with you. Time to talk with, our favorite guest, as a matter of fact, here in the Red Zone. He's also our most popular guest based on the emails. And he's also our most frequent guest based on how it ends up working out. We're in the bye week.
And this is my favorite show to do. So
you're a kind man.
A very nice place here.
You're a kind man. You know him as the voice of the Kansas City Chiefs, Mitch Holthus. He also, of course, hosts the Chiefs Kingdom on Sports Radio Radio 810 WHB Monday nights. Of course, hosts numerous TV shows, writes blogs.
Ivy Chiefs Insider. Yeah.
You are the Chiefs, man. You are if anyone outside of, I would say clearly, you know, all the players and the owner is the Chiefs, it's you. And I know you're going to say, well, the GM, the coach, hey, who's here first? Well, Mitch Holthus was, man. You're a big deal, man. You've been around the longest tenured play-by-play voice of the Kansas City Chiefs. Let's give it up.
Yeah, thanks.
I'm going to tell you. No, I'm going to give it up because I'm going to tell you that's
daily survival.
Yeah.
Survival of the fittest. I'm just, hey, 3-0. After being play-by-play of a team that's 6-35 in 41 weeks, you go 3-0. Heck yeah.
Not
yes. Only yeah. Heck yeah. Yeah,
absolutely. And it's more than just surviving. You're very modest, and I appreciate you trying to change the subject, but I won't let you. It's a tremendous accomplishment and one that I don't think we covered last time, so I want to get it out there and make sure everybody listening. We've got a lot of folks here in the Chiefs Kingdom around the globe, and Mitch Holthus is the best when it comes to play-by-play of a National Football League team, and he does it for the Kansas City Chiefs, and he is always incredibly. I don't think people have any idea what Mitch Holthus' schedule is like. He is unbelievably generous with his time as well and does many, many things on many, many platforms for the Chiefs and in the community. So, Mitch, we always appreciate your time when you join us here in the Red Zone. Let's talk about that 3-0 team. It's a good time to be a Kansas City Chiefs fan. It's been a long time, probably since, the 49ers upset the Broncos at the end of the 2006 season, or maybe at the conclusion of, a 14, or was it a 12-10 or 14-12 win over the Minnesota Vikings that made the Chiefs 4-3 in 2007 and had them alone in the AFC West. I suppose that was still a pretty solid time to be a Kansas City Chiefs fan. Until now, this is certainly the best it's been in a long, long time around here.
Yeah, you know what's weird about those two scenarios where I didn't feel that way then was I didn't know where the upside was. You were going, wait a minute, where's this headed? I mean, I just got asked on another feature I did, what's your greatest call? And I don't have it yet. I can't give it to you because all the calls that I've had, they've not led to anything. This is a different feeling, Seren, and I'm not just, you know, rubbing your ears, the ears of the folks on KCChiefs.com. It's a different feeling. First of all, this 3-0 start, when you look at these young guys on this team and realize they're going to just get better. But the second, the way they've done this, the way they've done the 3-0 is as big a story as being 3-0. And hear me out on this. One, to defend the fort, four downs at the 4 and the 6 against an offense of San Diego that had put up the best numbers in 55 years in the league, to do it that way. Then the next week at Cleveland, and I don't think people have probably given them enough credit for the Cleveland win. Short week after an emotional Monday night game, and they just gut it out. They do not give the ball to Cleveland in the fourth quarter. They have the ball 21-plus minutes in the second half and don't give the ball back. They end by kneeling down by getting first downs. That's not happened here in a long time. Even those teams that were really good on offense struggle with that in 03 and 04 and 05. And then thirdly, to obliterate a good team. I still think San Francisco is a good team. And to absolutely obliterate them in all phases. That, to me, is the bigger story. It hasn't been all defense. You're not winning them all 10-9 and blocking a field goal at the end. You're not winning them all 44-42. You're sitting here looking at a team that is doing it in all three areas, and you've got guys that are playing at the highest levels that they've played so far in their career. Guys like Dorsey, Derek Johnson, Brandon Flowers, and they're doing it on a consistent basis. That's what excites me, because I got a feeling this could be leading to something.
Yeah, and I think I'm with you that there is a real feeling that hasn't been here since the 90s.
Exactly.
That this football team can win in many different ways. They can outscore you. They can out-defend you. They can out-special teams you. They're a complete football team. And I think you've got to give a lot of credit to the guys up top. I mean, that's what Scott Pioli said he wanted to create. I mean, they constantly say the word team, and I think it becomes a punchline for a lot of people because everybody says it.
Right.
Proof is in the pudding. I mean, you can talk it, but you got to walk it. And right now they are, because this is truly a team. They're not the best offense in the league. They're not the best defense in the league. They might be the best special teams in the league because their coverage units are the best kept secret in all of football right
yep.
now. Their kicking game is outstanding. I know Suckup missed one over the weekend, but you know he doesn't walk on water, so he's going to miss a
but
couple.
He came right back and nailed a 32-yarder.
Absolutely.
I
Absolutely. I mean, absolutely.
That told me everything I needed to know right there.
You know, they might be the best rushing attack. You know, they may not be the best offense, the best defense. They may not be the best special teams. But, you know, they're good at all of it. And they might be the best at different elements along the way. And I just can't point to a time. You know, 03, they were definitely, you know, the, you know, as good of an offense as you were going to find. Great firepower. But we know the problems they had on defense and even in their coverage units. I mean, as good as their return units were, their coverage units struggled during those times. You have to go back to the 90s to find this complete of a football team. And that's why you get excited. I'm with you wholeheartedly.
And young guys are doing it. Now, this is going to sound cheesy, but hear me out. This is, I think it's a very real thing. And it jumped off the tape at me when I reviewed the tape of the San Francisco game. Let me tell you a dynamic that they've got going that's so difficult to have at any professional level, any really high college level, and really, really hard to have in football. Because it's the only sport where, I mean, in hockey, you play defense and you play offense. Basketball, same way. Baseball, same way. You got two separate divisions, basically. Trust. What I'm seeing on tape, Saran, is the word trust. Meaning, hear this out. All right, Castle throws the pick against San Francisco. Still 0-0 knockdown dragout. There's a sense that the defense, the offense is trusting that the defense will get it back. Flowers gets the interception. That leads to the touchdown to McCluster. At the end of the half, Suckup misses the field goal. But there's this feeling of, you know what, defense will get it back. We'll get you the ball back, and we trust that you'll go down and get it done this time. And they do a heck of a two-minute drill and kick the field goal. In special teams, you talked about them being number one. They're number one in the NFL in kick coverage, and they're number one in the NFL in punt coverage in 20-yard punt returns or more, and fourth overall. The point is everybody's trusting everybody else. Now, all of a sudden, this didn't happen last year. You got coaches trusting coaches, coaches trusting players, players trusting players. And when you get that going throughout a football team at the professional level, you can do some crazy things, because there's a few times we've seen it in the last 10 or 15 years in the league, and those stories have usually turned out to be pretty good.
Yeah, we're talking to Mitch Holthus, the voice of the Kansas City Chiefs. All right, why is this team winning? You mentioned the trust. That's one big part of it. Let's talk about what they're actually accomplishing between the lines, and we'll get around to the job that Charlie Weiss and Romeo Crennel have been doing with this football team. But as you look at it, and I know you study it closer than anybody out there, why is this team winning?
Well, first of all, I appreciate you. You do such a great job of building a thesis based on fact. And in the world of opinion where we throw crap against the wall and think, you know, you've got to somehow sometimes build a thesis. Now, what I'm seeing are some things that are beyond the obvious that are jumping out. One is no red zone turnovers. Now, this goes to last year. They have not turned it over in the red zone for 19 straight games. Okay, that's a heck of a streak. No red zone turnovers. The only time in a year and a half that they've had a turnover was they lose, the time ran out on them against Oakland in week two in 2009. They are first in the NFL with zero giveaway points. The NFL average after 3 weeks is 13. Even the best of teams will sometimes give you a 3 or a 6 or 7. These guys have given away zero giveaway points. On the other, because people talk about takeaways or the lack thereof, but it's what you do with those. And I've heard you mention this on your show in the past. But the other side of this is they have 24 takeaway points. They're maximizing their plus one giveaway takeaway by getting 24 takeaway points. So around the average after 3 weeks in the NFL is 13. The Chiefs are setting at 24. Here's another big area. Only two teams have less negative plays than the Chiefs. They're not getting negative plays. They're top five in less, fewest penalties. But even more than that, here's where it goes beyond the stat. They are number five in penalty yards by unit, meaning they're not getting 15-yard penalties or 10-yard penalties. If they are being penalized, they're minor penalties that, for the most part, they've taken them out of a couple drives. But it's not like last year where a 10-yard penalty and you're toast. You're cooked. What's obvious is that they're number one in the NFL in rushing. What's not so obvious is they're number one in the NFL in five runs of 20-plus or more. Mm-hmm. And I know four of those are Charles, but you get explosiveness out of your run game. It's not like you're just churning and burning three, four, five. Even, you know, and Jones had the 20-plus yarder last week. They're number two in fewest sacks allowed in the league. That goes back to negative plays. They're in five-minute drives, they were dead last year. They were 32nd. This year, they're ninth. They've had five-minute drives in the first 3 weeks of the season. But here's where the story goes beyond that. it's not like they're sitting there and playing Marty ball, because they're tied for fourth in the league in 38 offensive possessions. The average number in offensive possessions after 3 weeks was 34. So you can average that out divided by three. The Chiefs are sitting at 38. So they're not only they're hanging onto the ball and avoiding three and outs, they're able to get a multiple number of possessions. That's a good sign. That's how good teams win. And then on the other side, they've been so woeful at forcing three and outs, they're third in the league.
Yeah.
They're third in the league in three and outs. And 15% of the time, they're second in the league in an opponent scoring efficiency, because opponents are only scoring 15% of their drives, and the league average is 30%. And when you start digging into those, you're going, okay, I see this. They're avoiding negative plays. They're not getting penalized. They're winning field position. They still have the ability to get big plays. They did show that against San Francisco. And if that becomes a consistent part of their package, where they pop a big play now once every quarter, you got a little something going on.
Yeah, and they do have something going on. Let's focus on the defense. Or let me give you a stat. I mentioned this on my radio show the other day. Top six teams when it comes to rushing the football. The Chiefs are number one by 1 yard over the Atlanta Falcons, but they are number one running the football, which is something. And here's something. You mentioned trust. Let's go back to that, because this is how I would say trust. You know, for me as a fan, forget about analyzing it. It doesn't matter about trust. You analyze what's going on when in your job. But as a fan, I trust Todd Haley. I trust Scott Pioli. And I'll tell you why I trust Todd Haley, because Todd Haley in training camp said, we're going to run the ball. We're going to be a running team. And we talked about how they were number two to the Steelers and running the football in preseason. And he said, well, we're going to run the ball. They're running the ball. They're number one in the NFL. And I'm not saying they have to be. If they were number eight in the NFL, I'd be content that, okay, Todd Haley had a game plan. He told it to us straight. He said, we're going to run the ball. We're going to be a running team. He said, we're going to have to win ugly at times. They've won ugly, which is a sign of a team that's got some toughness. Scott Pioli talked about building a smart, tough team. You know, it was a smart, tough, physical, strong team. You know, you don't win those ugly games unless you're smart, unless you're tough. You don't win in Cleveland when clearly everything's not firing on all cylinders. The big return game was not there, but the coverage unit was. The coverage unit snuffed out Josh Cribbs. That's not pretty. That's not sexy, but that's getting it done. They didn't get 21 points in the second half to come from behind. They got six, but the defense put up zero, and the offense, as you said, held the ball for 21 minutes, making it almost impossible for Cleveland to get points. That was an ugly win. You know what? Ugly wins are how you win on the road in the NFL. So to me, the trust aspect that's there from a fan standpoint are the fact that these guys have come in and said, this is what we're going to do. Now they're doing it. I've got to believe that the trust aspect is there from the same standpoint, because they've told the players, this is what we're doing. This is what we're working on. This is why we're handling you this way, because this is the way we're going to play. Now they're doing it. And if you watch that game against the 49ers, that was a football team having fun. They have worked very hard. They're seeing the fruits of their labor. And it was fun. It was fun to be a fan. I got to believe it was 10 times as fun to be down on that sideline and be a part of this organization as either a player or a coach. And I think that's the team aspect. Like we said, team is thrown around a lot, but I see the team building that this organization has done.
Well, let me give you a couple other examples of that, and let's just take the San Francisco game alone. As I watched the tape, I actually ran out of time. I was doing this charting. I watched the whole tape, but in the first half alone, they had 38 plays. 20 passes, 18 runs, and I counted 15 different formations.
Oh.
15 different formations. All of a sudden now, they've become very difficult to prepare for. If you're Indianapolis, you got to beat Jacksonville this week, but after that, you're sitting there looking at trying to prepare for these guys, and it's become way harder. So you've got to be smart enough to handle that plan, because they threw everything at them with all these different personnel groups, and they set things up. The flea flicker was set up because of the play that they ran on fourth and one. They ran that rocket sweep out of an unbalanced, you know, it was just set up. So then it looks like the same thing. Well, no, if it's not, it's 48 yards over the top of you. Defensively, same way. Romeo Crennel, when I did my prep on San Francisco, go, this is going to be a problem, because San Francisco not only can run Gore, they can throw it to him, and their screen game is very good. Plus, you've got Davis. Here's the way Romeo dealt with it. He basically ran a box and one. Actually, a triangle and two. He put up defensive schemes where he had guys in roles that play to their strengths, allowing Tom Mahaly to pressure the quarterback, but then don't let Davis go free. He had John McGraw out there in a specialty package basically shadowing him all day, and Derek Johnson was shadowing Frank Gore all day long for the most part. Now, that's a generalization, but listen, to be smart and top, one thing is to have that plan. You and I could sit down on Tuesday night and go, this is a hell of a plan. This is going to work. But to translate it to your players and your players execute it is a whole other thing. That's my point. Now, all of a sudden, these coaches are going, you know what? We can throw this wrinkle at Peyton Manning, or we can do this, because there's nothing I can tell you that's going to predict what they do against Indianapolis now. They're not predictable at all, Chiefs aren't, on either side of the ball. But it's another thing to translate it to your players and have them execute it, because that's most of the time where the breakdown happens, is somewhere between Tuesday and Wednesday or Wednesday and Sunday, where they don't get it or you can't do it athletically. They had an awesome plan, not only on defense, they had a great defensive plan against San Francisco. It blew me away to see what they did.
And I think the best way to describe that is, look, every defensive scheme works on the blackboard.
Exactly.
I mean, when you draw it on the blackboard, it works. The question is, have you drawn up a scheme that works with your set of athletes against their set of athletes? Your set of personalities and you know, set of individuals, will it work? And that's where it comes to, starts with Scott Pioli finding the type of individuals that can apply those different schemes that you want to do, play intelligent football while also being extreme athletes that can perform physically. Then it's up to Romeo Crennel to take the collection of personalities and athletes and then define the scheme that's going to put them in their best chance to succeed. And I've never seen, I got to be honest with you, and maybe when I was younger and I didn't really know what was going on, it happened and I wasn't aware of it, but in my conscious football life, I've never seen one coaching staff kick the crap out of another coaching staff the way it happened on Sunday.
You could almost see it on tape. And I love Greg Minuski, but you could almost see it on tape. He's the defensive coordinator of the 49ers. You can see it like midway through the third quarter. Their guys are going, oh, okay, that's it. You got us. Here's our sword. We'll go. Who do we play next week? You could almost see it. After it went 17-3, and the Chiefs are throwing them and executing and everything that they're doing for the most part, they're going, we don't know what we're doing here. We don't know how to handle this. You bring in McCluster, we got a linebacker on him. You know, we're screwed. You got Jones now. Oh, you're throwing. Soren, they threw seven different screens that I counted to five different players.
Yeah.
Seven different screens. Now, I haven't seen five screens in 5 years. They run five or seven different types of screens to five different players. And, I mean, Castile got one, Moiaki got one, Jones got one, Charles got one, who am I leaving out, got one. McCluster got one.
Yeah.
So all of a sudden now, I mean, you've got to decide as a defense, what are we going to do to handle this? And San Francisco finally said, we can't handle it. You got it. Who do we play next week? We're going to try to win a game.
I'll add to you on Greg Minuski, he's a pretty damn good coach, too.
And he they were great against New Orleans. They should have beat them.
They were.
New Orleans beat them.
Absolutely.
You know,
absolutely.
So, I mean, And I said at the end of the broadcast, and I had a lot of feedback. I got texts and tweets and everything else, like, you're stupid. Because I said they could still win the NFC West if they don't freak out. But now they're kind of freaking out. They fired Jimmy Ray. Things come unraveled. They probably will goof it up. But they still have enough talent to win that division, in my opinion. That's a good team.
Yeah, it is. And Greg Minuski can coach. I mean, he's had one of the better defenses for the last couple of years. And a lot of people think he's got the potential to be a head coach. And I don't say that, you know, flippantly. I say that to explain how impressive it was what the Chiefs coaching staff did. We're talking to Mitch Holthus, of course, the voice of the Kansas City Chiefs here in the Red Zone.
Well, you've touched on something, though, too, Soren. I think a developing story here is Todd Haley. And I think it's been kind of a little bit of a hidden story because he's different this year. I know last year was a fire drill, so maybe we ought to, you know, but he's different. He's acting like a head coach. And being a head coach, and you've said it before, and I'll say it too, you're a CEO of your own company. You got multi-million dollar budgets. Yes, Scott Pioli's the GM and oversees everything on the football side. But as a head coach, look how many people you have to manage. You got to manage like 12 dozen people. And then you got the media scrutiny every day. To me, it's a big story because I think he's come a long way in a year, in my opinion.
Oh, I'm with you. And I think it's a big story as to how the organization, that, you know, that the job is not done when you hire the general manager. And then it's not done when you hire the coach. And you know what? It won't be done at the end of this year. It continues because coaches will come and go and get promotions. And how do you re-equip them? I mean, you know, they're in a great situation that they were able to grab Charlie Weiss and Romeo Crennel. But, you know, they did it. Those guys were available for anybody in the NFL, and they were able to get them. And the Chiefs are getting the rewards of that right now. There's no doubt about it. Mitch Holthus is with us here in the Red Zone. We'll take a break, come back. We'll talk about some of the more of the numbers as well as some more of the players that are impacting this team.
The Red Zone with Soren Petro will be right back here on KCChiefs.com.
Welcome to Chiefs Country, where fans like you wear their passion for their team like war paint. It's for you, Chiefs fans, that we created Chiefs Checking with the official Chiefs debit card and discounts on Chiefs gear all year long.
Visit Metcalf Bank or ChiefsChecking.com and for a limited time, sign up and score a Chiefs game day cooler.
Chiefs Checking, because you're not just a fan on Sunday.
Only at Metcalf Bank. Strong roots, endless possibilities. Member Central Bank Company, member FDIC. See bank for details.
Hey, Chiefs fans, I'm Josh Looney of KCChiefs.com.
And I am the Internet. I usually don't endorse websites, but KCChiefs.com is legit.
I know. At KCChiefs.com, you can check out my daily blog, exclusive video content, see what's going on with the team. You can also interact with other fans in Chiefs 365, and much more.
I'm so excited. I can barely contain myself.
You want the Chiefs? Go to the Chiefs at KCChiefs.com.
Are you looking for that perfect gift? Maybe it's a birthday, a holiday, or just looking for something special for that extra special Chiefs fan in your life? Well, we have it. The 2010 Chiefs Cheerleader Swimsuit Calendar is now available at kcchiefs.com. This 16-month calendar features the entire Chiefs Cheerleader Squad in swimsuits shot in Red Hot Jamaica. Get your hands on the 16-month 2010 Chiefs Cheerleader Swimsuit Calendar online at the Chiefs Pro Shop at kcchiefs.com.
The off-season workouts are complete. Training camp is underway. The new Arrowhead Stadium is ready to make its Monday Night Football debut. The NFL season is near. Will you be there? Great seats are available with tickets to Chiefs games starting at just $30. Single game Chiefs tickets are on sale now at kcchiefs.com, the stadium box office, or via Ticketmaster. Experience the new Arrowhead Stadium and be there when your Chiefs take on the Packers, the Eagles, AFC West rivals the Broncos, Raiders, and Chargers, or the 49ers, Cardinals, Bills, Jags, or Titans. Great seats are available for all games, but won't last long and are subject to availability. Don't wait. Get your single game Chiefs tickets now at kcchiefs.com, the stadium box office, or any Ticketmaster location. The new Arrowhead, new body, same soul.
Now, let's get back into the Red Zone with Soren Petro, exclusively on kcchiefs.com.
All right, welcome back. You're in the Red Zone here at kcchiefs.com. Soren Petro with you on a Wednesday. We're talking to our favorite guest in the Red Zone, the voice of the Kansas City Chiefs, Mitch Holthus, joins us. Mitch, I started to give this statistic earlier. I'm going to give it to you now. We looked up the other day, top six teams running the ball. The Chiefs are number one. They're at the top of the list. Top six teams as far as playing defense against the run, rush defense. Now, the Chiefs are number six. That's why we cherry pick the top six. Top six teams running the football, okay? Chiefs 3-0, Falcons 2-1, Steelers 3-0, Raiders 1-2, Houston Texans 2-1, Minnesota Vikings 1-2. You get a combined record there of, what did I come up with? Let's see, 3-3, 4-5, 7-5, 9-6, 12-6. 12-6 are the six best teams running the football. Now let's go the other way, the six best teams at stopping the run. Bears 3-0, Texans 2-1, Steelers 3-0, Jets 2-1, Seahawks 2-1, and the Chiefs 3-0. You get a collective record there of 15-3. 12-6 for the teams that rush the football, the top six rushing teams, 15-3 for the top six teams defending the run. Now, that's a good place to start, and it should be pointed out also that the Chiefs, Steelers, and Texans are all listed in the on both sides of it. And it's also a point in that, you know, give you an example, like the Jets are number four in rush defense. They're number nine in rush offense. So they go hand in hand, especially running the ball. If you can run the ball, you help your defense immensely, and you certainly help your rush defense immensely. It's less plays they've got to defend, and it's less of a lead that they've got to try to overcome in those situations when you can't stop the run. Those two things go hand in hand, and it's not a coincidence that the Chiefs are good in both of those categories. Now, they've been a pretty good running team here for a while, but have been awful defensively against the run here in recent years, and how with virtually the same personnel, really the only difference personnel-wise is Sean Smith's addition to the front seven, on the front seven. That's the only front seven change. Then add Kendrick Lewis and Eric Berry to the safeties. No doubt there's some athleticism there. Sean Smith has made an impact. But that is amazing to think they can go from the number 31 rush defense in the NFL last year, and it's early, a lot of football to go, but already number six in the NFL, giving up just 75 a game in their rush defense this year.
Yeah, it's funny how that works. But until the rules change in football and you stop the clock after every play, or you run the clock in every play, run or pass, those running stats will always skew to the winning teams. I'm really sorry. But here's the second part of that. The Chiefs are second in the NFL in third and long, meaning six or more allowed on first downs. And you're saying, what are you talking about that for? They've only allowed 8% of third or six or more to make for first downs. The NFL average is 28%. I say that because last year they were last in the league in that category by far. They might stop the run, but then all of a sudden either a run, a lead draw, or a pass play would kill them and they'd get a first down. You're asking me what's going on here, and I think it's a combination of a lot of things. One, Romeo Crennel, I think, has been outstanding. But all throughout his staff, Anthony Pleasant is doing a much better job with this defensive line. Gary Gibbs has been solid with the linebacker core. Those guys are playing at a high level consistently. And then to bring in Emmett Thomas, who won a world championship in your organization, to sit there in those young DB's room and go, all right, here's how we're going to do this. To me, that's part of the equation. The second part is we're seeing the maturation of these players. It's why Tyson Jackson had his best game, and I'm anxious to get him back to see if he can continue to stay consistent. He's going to have to work hard to beat out Sean Smith now, who's plugging that two-gap like crazy. Ron Edwards is playing better. Dorsey's playing at a very high level. And even Toribio helped him the other day. And McGee had some moments in the Cleveland game. But you got guys that are maturing as athletes. They're being coached better. I love the schemes they have. They've got great schemes because they're not crazy schemes. They're solid schemes, but they make a lot of sense. And here's a very, very novel concept, Saran. We could sell DVDs if we can get this concept. You take the players you've got and play to their strengths. We're going to make you better in your weaknesses, but you know what? At the National Football League level, that's an off-season thing. What we're going to do is take what you can do and play to those. That's exactly what Romeo has done. He puts guys in roles where they can succeed. I've seen him doing it with Tom Bahali. I saw it happening in camp, and I loved it, thinking, all right, he's got a chance of keeping Tom out of areas where he can, you know, where he'll struggle, because we'll cover that by doing something else. I love the schemes he's got. He's got like four or five or six different sub-packages he'll throw at you, and it just throws teams off. Gilberry, I should have mentioned him. He can be all over the field. He's played the zero tech in some. He's playing defensive end, you know, with the three and five technique. So it's a combination of a lot of things. And it's another part that your offense doesn't stink. Because if your offense keeps going three and out, you could be the 2000 Ravens and sometime have a trouble because you cannot be out there. The one game they got by was being out there against San Diego because they were out there in an inordinate amount of time, and they still held the fort and held it at the end. That's why I'm saying it's three wins three different ways. But if your offense does that again the second week against Cleveland, you're going to lose. You're going to lose. You're going to lose. And if you do it again the third week against San Francisco, you're probably going to lose. So the point being made here, it's a combination of all those things. Coaching, players are getting better, trusting their scheme, coaches can trust them to do their job, and the offense is helping them out by not having them out there a ghastly, 201 possessions last year. Come on. Second worst in the league. The numbers will go down if you're that out there that much.
Yeah, they will. And, you know, I think what is important as well is the fact that everybody, like you said, is on the same page. And there is no, whenever something's gone wrong, because things will go wrong, another unit's been there to step up and bail them out. And that's what you like. And, you know, I think, look, I expected the 49ers to come in and win by maybe a field goal, but more likely 7 to 10 points in that game. And I think what we saw was, you know, people were complaining about, well, they were kind of lucky against Cleveland, or, you know, they were lucky against San Diego. I heard people trying to explain away or give up their victories as, well, they're just lucky. Just wait until things start coming around and you'll see the real Chiefs. Well, no, what we saw was they hadn't really played that well. in those first two games, yet they still found a way to win, or at least not everything went their way. Then they put together a fairly complete game, and they dominated the 49ers. Now the question starts to become, and you hit on one of them, and we'll start with that, is when they start getting healthy, because they haven't been 100% healthy either. And when they start getting healthy and they get Tyson Jackson back, who maybe was playing, as you said, his best game as a Chief against the San Diego Chargers, add him back into that defensive line equation, and now things start to get real exciting that this defense can get even better.
Yep, because now you got Romeo, who's got another. He can continue to tinker with this defense, but still, I mean, I've seen guys defensively here tinker, okay, but it's not been sound, or players don't trust the scheme, and so I'm going to jump out of this gap because I think the guy's an idiot in the thing that he's got me called in. That's what I'm saying. These guys trust Romeo. They're going to get him in the right spot. But now you get Tyson back, so Sean Smith can bump down to the zero tech. You keep Ron Edwards fresher. You got Gilberry, who can be the joker and the wild card because he can line up anywhere. Now all of a sudden you can put some pressure on. It just gives them one more weapon to work on. I mean, well, overall throughout the season, those guys have got to stay fresh because last year part of the team, I mean, the reason they've won these three games, they're not getting gouged in the run game. People say they're lucky. They're lucky. Ryan Matthews never got going. And one of the plays he got going was a 15-yard game where he got stripped. Okay, Jerome Harrison never got going in that game. They had Peyton Hillis slam ahead as the 8th grade guy in the 7th grade game, getting 3 yards at a time. Well, that's 3 yards. That's not Harrison running a counter, you know, a lead draw or a counter and going for 40 yards and running down your throat. And the same way the other day, Gore never got going. Run fits are there. Guys are tackling. They're doing their job. If you do that all year, I'll line them up against anybody.
And I'll even say this. Take a look at what Cleveland did in the rushing attack against the Baltimore Ravens. Peyton Hillis went for over 100 against Baltimore, which is considered and has been one of the best defenses in football. So it validates what the Chiefs did against the Cleveland Browns. And I'll tell you something else, and this is one of the things that I always look at, is, you know, where do you rank in points and where do you rank in yards? Because the goal is obviously points. Now, but you
that's
get
the big one to look at.
It is, but you get there through yards.
Right.
If you're giving up 1 million yards, eventually they're going to cross the goal line. All right. If you're gaining no yards, it's going to be very difficult to put points on the board. So that's why the yards are important. But you're right, points is the key. A lot of times, though, you'll see
some teams get they'll stiffen up in the red zone. It's like last night's game, okay, or the Monday night game. I'm sorry, where Chicago gives up a 9-minute drive and Green Bay does not score. All right, you can get yards, but if I get to your 30 and 20 and can't bust it in there, and I'm kicking threes or zeros, I'm still going to win the game.
Right, and so my point here is, you look at the yards because they're an indicator. In other words, if a team's not giving up any points, but they're giving up a ton of yards, you start going, well, at some point that might come back around. Unless they do it all the time. Now, we'll see offensively, and I need to track this down on Charlie Weiss, but on Romeo Crennel, every year he was in New England, he was better in points than he was in yards. In other words, he gave up some yards, but he always minimized what those yards came in points. And that is, the yards he gave up, there's clearly a plan, and there is a gear shift that goes on with Romeo Crennel. Okay, I'm going to maybe show you my base defense or play a little just straight up here, but when it gets down to money time, when you start getting into field goal range, you get to the goal line, I've got something left to throw at you. Or they just have the kind of football players that can ratchet it up. It's probably a combination of the both, to be honest with you. But, you know, overall, offensively right now, they're the number 17 offense in the league. But they're number 11 when it comes to scoring. Defensively, they're the number 13 defense in the league, which is measured by yards again. They're number 2 in scoring defense. And that's not a coincidence with Romeo Crennel. It happened every year he was in New England. There is clearly a strategy to what he is doing, and he'll give you the yards because while they're a statistic that I do think some coaches chase, they want to be that number one defense, you know, or the number one offense. So they are about piling up those yards. He's about limiting the points, and his defensive statistics reflect that. That it's not a coincidence. Now, I don't think they're going to be 13-2. They're either going to be 6-2, sixth in yards and second in points if they're going to stay there in points, or they're going to come down to about ninth in points and 13th in yards if they're going to stay there in yards. But he constantly finishes better in points than yards allowed, and that's not a coincidence. That's a guy who gets it on the big picture of things.
And they've not been gouged in the run game. They've only allowed one run.
That's where it starts. That's where it starts, is in that run defense.
And they only have given up one run or 20 yards or more. And they've got 5 on the offensive end. And they've given up some big plays. We've seen some broken assignments, the 56-yarder, 59-yarder to Nani, 65-yarder to Cribbs. Gore had had some garbage plays. One he had was not garbage. They got a nice little pick. They ran crisscrossed him, and San Francisco had a nice play there, but they're not getting gouged in the run game. There's not been a big time where they're just running down their throat. And if you got that going on, you might give up some yards here and there. You may even give up a big play. But it's going to be hard to light up the scoreboard on you.
All right, we'll take a break here. When we come back, Mitch Holthus. We go through some of the players and get his thoughts on how they are playing. It's the voice of the Kansas City Chiefs with us here in the Red Zone.
The Red Zone with Soren Petro will be right back here on KCChiefs.com. It is time for a new era with new vision and new hope. This is the 2010 Kansas City Chiefs, a team on the rise with the opening of the new and improved Arrowhead Stadium. It's got a new body, but still has the same soul. A team with electrifying young talent.
Charles on his feet, left side angling, cutback, 15, 10, 5, touchdown, Jamal Charles.
A team focused, disciplined, and determined under the direction of head coach Todd Haley.
Just do your job, and we'll win this game. And the Chiefs put the hammer down.
Now is the perfect time to be part of the energy and excitement of one of the best atmospheres in the NFL.
And this kick is good. Ryan Suckup wins the game in overtime.
The party starts this August. Lock down your season tickets now by going to kcchiefs.com. Experience the new Arrowhead Stadium. New body, same soul.
Every Sunday, a city of more than 2 million unites. A community of fans thousands strong anticipates. A team of 53 players charges the field.
It's a sweep left to the fullback, and a great block springs up to the outside. He's up the left sideline.
And one grocery store is proud to support them all.
20. He's going to outrace everyone to the end zone. Touchdown, Kansas City!
Hy-Vee, an official sponsor of the Kansas City Chiefs. A Kansas City Chiefs fan, they'll tailgate just about anywhere. And they live to hear the three most important words ever.
Tailgate Kansas City!
With Hy-Vee's weekly tailgate specials, you'll find everything you need for your next Chiefs tailgate or Chiefs party. Stop into Hy-Vee and stock up with new tailgate specials every week.
Hy-Vee, an official sponsor of the Kansas City Chiefs.
Chiefs fans, it's back to football time. Mark your calendars for these upcoming Chiefs events. Thursday night, September 9th, celebrate the NFL football season at the Back to Football Bash at the new Arrowhead Stadium, brought to you by Bud Light. This free event will feature a Chiefs pep rally, tours of the new Arrowhead Stadium. You'll hear from General Manager Scott Pioli and Chiefs Chairman Clark Hunt, plus player autographs and live music. Visit the Chiefs Hall of Honor, presented by Time Warner Cable. Play in the Sports Lab and check out the new Chiefs team store on September 10th. Show your spirit and wear your Chiefs red. It's Red Friday. Look for Chiefs personnel and local celebrities on Kansas City street corners taking donations for the annual Red Friday magazine. Plus, be on the lookout for the Chiefs cheerleaders and others painting the town red. Don't forget, September 9th, the Back to Football Bash at the new Arrowhead Stadium. And September 10th is Red Friday. Visit kcchiefs.com for details on all upcoming Chiefs events as we proudly welcome back football. Now, let's get back into the Red Zone with Soren Petro, exclusively on kcchiefs.com.
All right, welcome back here in the Red Zone. Soren Petro along with Mitch Holthus. Mitch, let's hit on a couple of the players. We've talked about a lot of the coaching staff, a lot of the numbers. I want to hit on a couple of guys. Let's talk about Matt Cassel, what he's done. A lot of people questioning whether or not he's the guy to lead this team going forward. His best game of the year, obviously, came against the San Francisco 49ers. Three touchdowns, one INT, 250, quarterback rating of 111. Matt Cassel, with the weapons he's got, you like what Matt Cassel's developing into as a quarterback for the Chiefs, or does he still have a lot of work to do?
Well, I still think there's work to do, and he continues to work on his mechanics. Getting to his drops, you know, avoiding kind of some habits that kind of come back in play, and he would be the first to admit that to him. We had him on the Kingdom Monday night. It was awesome. He's a tough kid, but here's what I'm seeing and what I like, and here's where your baseline starts with me with a quarterback. Does he have enough talent to make, well, let me just take this week by week. a forgotten play is his bootleg run against San Diego.
Yep.
He gets him a first down, runs over the linebacker, the guy they got from Dallas, 99, can't think of his name, but runs, takes his shoulder and puts it into the chest of the dude and gets a first down. Now on first and goal, whoops, they get fine Moyaki on the touchdown. All right, that's a huge play in that game, a huge play. Cleveland, people are saying he's not putting up any numbers. You know, where's the fantasy football guy? He's not. He made five huge throws in the second half, and I felt badly because I don't think Lenny and I gave him enough credit in the second half of that Cleveland game, because that thing could be decided by so many snaps. You're thinking, wow, this thing could be one player or the other. This could decide it.
Awesome on third down. He was awesome on third down. Had a 97 quarterback rating in the second half against Cleveland.
And the throws he made, Seren, he throws a deep cross to Bo against double coverage and puts it right on the money. He throws a cross to Bo, single coverage this time, deep cross. Those are, I think, both third down plays. He gets Moyaki twice. Those were kind of scheme plays, good routes by Moyaki, but Matt made good throws. And then a forgotten throws is deep out, which is the hardest throw to make in the NFL, in my opinion. The deep out, he puts it two chambers that leads to the game-winning field goal, 16-14. Now, when you look at the numbers of that game, it doesn't look like a Drew Brees kind of day, but he made plays when he had to. San Diego, he made plays when he had to. And in the game against San Francisco, he does the same thing. But now he plays into the work of the offense. You throw a swing pass to McCluster, who's against a linebacker, and he gets it there where McCluster's got a full head of speed. He's going to kill that linebacker every time. LeBoy tries to make an effort. He cannot be. He did this. Did the same thing to Charles in the Cleveland game because Fujita was all over the place. Fujita played great for Cleveland in that game, but they got him one-on-one against Jamal Charles. It's a play-action fake, and he throws to Charles, who's against the linebacker. Matt puts it on the money where Charles doesn't have to juggle the ball or change his running route. He catches it and runs past the linebacker for 27 yards. I don't know if you remember that play.
Mm-hmm.
All right, a couple second-down plays then to Moyaki, but there's five plays he makes in the third quarter or the second half of the Cleveland game. He now, the other day, they get the offense rolling, and he's starting to click. The Shante Spencer interception, I'm sure he'd love to have back. But he's starting to make throws now, and you're going to get some throws where he's going to throw in the flat or get a wheel route to a back or something that's kind of a schemey kind of thing that's going to end up being a big play. But that's the way that things are going to be. I still seen enough from Matt Castle where he will make plays. He did it against Pittsburgh last year. He did it against Dallas in the two-minute drill where you've got to – it's not a scheme play. You've got to make a play yourself. Now, don't – take this wrong, don't get me wrong, but I think it's worth the discussion. After 33 starts in his career, he is 17-16. You know what Peyton Manning's record was after 33 starts? 17-16. I'm not saying he's Peyton Manning. I'm not saying he's not. But the point is, we want to write the end of the story before the story
right.
even gets begins here.
Right.
I mean, Brees was 14-19 after 33 starts. Aikman was 11-21, and Steve Young was 12-21, and 12-21. I'm not saying he's those guys, but I see enough there to go, hey, this guy can help you win and maybe win at a high, and maybe the highest level. I don't know. There's more there than I think fans are giving him credit for.
Look, I'm going to say this. I'm with you, and I will say he's not Peyton Manning. I'll say he's not Tom Brady. I'll say he's not Drew Brees. He did get his first 15 starts with a team that was 16-0 the year before, where all those guys you're talking about all
and
started.
His 4-12 record is with 9 offensive linemen, so we got to temper that too. His 4-12.
Yeah. Oh, yes.
Yeah.
And, you know, in the next year, then he goes back to a team that they all started on. You know,
right.
Goes back to that.
I should say didn't play the opening.
So it's a fair statistic. You know, I'm with you. I agree. I'll tell you, he's not Brady. He's not Manning. He's not Breeze. But he might be greasy. Okay, he might be star. And I'm not saying as far as where they ranked in their day. But when you go back, the way those guys played quarterback.
You mean Bob, not Brian.
Yeah, right? Bob. Yeah, Bob Greasy. Yeah, I'm sorry. Bob
and
Greasy.
Bart, not Holly Star.
Yeah, Bob Greasy won a Super Bowl MVP with, what, 10, 12 attempts in a game? I mean, they ran the ball and they played defense. That perfect Dolphin team ran the ball and it played defense. Now,
he made throws when he had to.
Yeah, he
Bob
made throws.
He would make throws when he had to.
I'll
throw another one in. People talk about Namath guaranteeing the win. Look at his stats in 68 games.
They
ran the ball and played defense and won 16-7.
Matt Snell should have been the MVP of that Super Bowl and not Joe Namath. But you know, the point here is not that he's those guys. And those guys were the Brady of their day. And it was a different time and the game was played differently. And I'm also not trying to minimize what they did. My point is
They had great defenses and they ran the ball. And if you can do that, then you need a guy to make plays in the passing game. Now, he's going to have to make more plays. He's not going to go into a Super Bowl and throw the ball 10 times and win. It's not going to happen in the playoffs because everybody studied it and they gang up on the run, and you're going to have a passing game. But when he's had to have a passing game, second half against Cleveland, trailing by four, he throws up a 97 quarterback rating. Against the 49ers, you know, he had a great running game, and he gave you the total package. He gave you a 111 quarterback rating. So I'm with you. Is he the answer? Is he a franchise quarterback? You know, no, if you're asking for a guy that's going to single-handedly carry your team the way a John Elway did in carrying three mediocre teams to the Super Bowl and winning a couple others on the downslope of his career. No, he's not that guy. But is he a guy that if you equip him with enough weapons around him and a good enough defense that can win some playoff games, maybe even win three playoff games in a row against playoff-caliber competition? The early returns are he could be. And so I think you put it best. Quit writing the ending. You know, just read the book. Let's see what happens before we get to that final chapter. I'm with you. How about the running backs? That's been a big discussion as well. What do you think about how the two running backs have been used?
I'm going to throw in a third. I'm going to throw McCluster in there because to me he's hybrid.
Okay.
And I gave the analogy on the play-by-play during the San Francisco game that you've got the ace of hearts, the ace of diamonds, and the ace of clubs. I don't know. You're the ace of spades, I guess. But You're holding three aces.
Hey, Jackie Battle might be the way he ran in the preseason.
Yeah, okay, we'll throw him in there. But the point to be made here is, you know, people had their underwear up in their crevices of their body after the first 2 weeks. And honest to God, I think it was because they had Jamaal Charles on their fantasy team. A lot of them did. They're like, cut him loose. Well, you know what? I don't mind the way they've used him. And my line was, I don't think they could not have beaten San Diego without Jamaal Charles. Couldn't have done it. His huge 56-yard run was great. Now, Bo cleans out the safety and drills him. That's the whole trust factor. And then he goes for 56. I don't think they could have beat Cleveland without Thomas Jones because the guy does dirty, stinking work and gets it done and moves the pile, and he'll hit you for a big play. And then San Francisco, McCluster comes into the play. Not just as a wide receiver, but also as a running back. Those rocket sweeps are running back kind of plays.
Right.
Or they have him in there and they ran draws and screens to
him. It's the spot that Ricky Williams plays in Miami, so it's definitely a running back spot.
So, again, people look at Jamal's touches and they look at his and this is nothing against Jamal, man, because they're not 3-0 without Jamaal Charles, in my opinion. But I'm not sure they're 3-0 without Thomas Jones. And they might be 3-0 without McCluster, but maybe not. He breaks that game open the other day against San Francisco. That's what I'm saying. Instead of holding a six of clubs and a seven of hearts, you've got three aces. You're holding three aces, and Jackie Battler, you're the fourth. So to me, it's like just relax and let this work, because if anything, the San Francisco game showed everybody that was involved in that discussion, this can work.
Right.
Because all three can be huge in a same game. And when you get that going on, I'm telling you, you're hard to defend. If I'm Indianapolis looking at them, or looking at us going, okay, what are we going to do here? You've got a sleepless night, at least one coming, and probably a two of them, because there are now, for the first time in probably my entire 17 years of this team, you've got a matchup issue for the opponent that they can't deal with, or they're going to struggle. They've got to do some serious countermeasures to deal with it.
Now,
because we're holding aces, finally.
Let me ask you this, and here's where the question will come down. They're down 10 at Indy. Who's in the game?
Down 10 at Indy. What's the down and distance?
It's third down. It's first and 10. You're getting a possession after you just went down 10 points to the Colts. 7 minutes to go in the third quarter. First and 10 at your own 20.
I would say, well, it depends on what they want to do in their package. I would say two of the three. I'd almost go with Charles and McCluster at the same time.
See, to me, this is where I'm at on it. I think right now you can say, and at the end of the year we may say, this was absolute brilliantly managed running back by Maurice Carthon / Charlie Weiss / Todd Haley. I think that's entirely possible. But here, to me, will be the defining moment is when you get down there, at some point you've got to put your best on the field.
Yeah, and it depends on the situation. But I'm saying, okay.
It does. It does.
You're up seven. You got the ball at your own 20, first and 10. You're about ready to pull off the biggest upset in the NFL because you just might beat the Colts at Lucas Oil Stadium.
Okay, I'm up 7 at Indy. How much time in what quarter?
3:03 to go, and they've got two timeouts.
Where am I at?
You're at your own 20.
Okay, Thomas Jones.
Okay,
ball security, ball security.
But here, security, and I'm saying, hey, we can name Trump. You can name Trump. And how long has it been since you've been able to even name Trump? I mean, you're sitting there, you're gonna have to bid no Trump because you got no shot. So the point is, you can name Trump, and that's why I'm telling everybody in this
discussion. I'm with you. My point is, I think we find out definitively. I think we all know. I think we know the most dynamic runner is Charles. The guy who secures the ball is Jones. And the wild,
he'll pop a run too. I mean, he showed that the other day. It's not like he's just, you know, that's not a Koye or you know.
Don't run down the past. You always run down the past.
I know.
Mitch.
I love a Koye. I'm not running down the past.
A Koye had 50 and 60 yard runs. When Thomas Jones pops off a 50 or 60, let me know.
I agree. Koye is a bad.
Yeah,
one.
But I know what you're saying. He's not. It's not O.J. Anderson in the Giants. You know, year
there
where he ground to 1,000 yards 3.6 at a time. I'm sorry to Giant fans if it was 4.2 or whatever it was. He was an effective back, but he wasn't going to bust the big one. My point is, when they need the big play, it'll be Charles.
And it'll be McCluster. He's going to do it because he can do it as a receiver, as a running back. And you're going to play the Colts. And even if you hang on to the ball, look what the Texans had a great plan. I mean, they go nuts on him and just run the ball down their throat, but that's still, it's what, a 30-24 game or something like that?
Right.
You're going to have to score points and understand that. And Charles gives you a chance to get a big play, so does McCluster.
And I'm not here to say that teams have to be built on how you play down 10. I mean, most playoff teams, most Super Bowl champions will not find themselves down 10 at any point during the playoffs. They'll play from in front, they'll out-coach, they'll out-scheme, they'll out-perform, and they won't have to do that. But in all likelihood, most teams will find themselves trailing at some point. And that, to me, will be the big question mark. How does this team respond? Because they're going to trail. Because they're going to lose. They're not going to go 16-0. And we'll learn a lot about them when they are down. We've seen them down 4 on the road against Cleveland. And I think we got a great response. We got a defense that played lights out and an offense that dominated the ball and a quarterback that threw a 97 quarterback rating. It'll be interesting to see what happens when they come up against another opponent in a negative situation and how they respond. And that's one of the things that I think will be really exciting. I want to get to two more players real quick, Mitch. Two more spots. The middle linebackers. How about Jovan Belcher and Derek Johnson stepping into that starting lineup and how they have performed?
Smoking hot. Belcher is an understated guy in this whole scheme. Go back 5 paragraphs ago or whenever we were talking about run fits and run defense and trusting. Your Mike backer, he's basically the Mike backer in this 3-4. He's going to the strong side most of the time, which means, you know, they're loaded up against you. For a free agent out of Maine, he's one of the stories of this team that nobody's talking about to me. Derek Johnson is reborn. He is reborn. I don't know how it happened. We had him on the Kingdom. The guy's a different guy. He's different personally. He's different on the field. He's been consistent. This is not something that happens Tuesday. You don't see it again until the following Wednesday. He's doing it Tuesday, Wednesday. Did it first day at St. Joe, third week of St. Joe, third week of the season. That excites me because, you know, you always hear Todd Haley talking about consistency. You could argue those two cats have been the most consistent on the whole team. Other than the offensive line have been good, but those two cats have been really, really good.
All right, then the next player, Eric Berry. Number 5 overall pick, huge expectations. He's been burnt deep a couple of times, we presume. We're not in the huddle nor in the film room to break down everybody's assignment, but it certainly looks like he's been beat deep a couple of times, struggled with Antonio Gates early on, offsides on the kickoff, on the onside kickoff, but has been a missile in run defense. You know, we obviously love what he's doing in his athleticism. We see when he comes up and helps on the run. And he had a play in the San Francisco game that was in traffic in the middle where Gore was about to get loose, and he didn't because here came Eric Berry from off the screen, if you were watching on TV, to finish him off. And it was a little like no-yard gain or one-yard gain that nobody will ever talk about. And there was potential there for it to be a big play, and Eric Berry finished the deal. He has been very good in the run defense. Rookies are going to make mistakes. What do you think about the mistakes he's made and whether or not they're going to go away and not be there when he's not a first couple of game player?
I'm going to throw Kendrick Lewis in there as well.
Okay.
I've got to put the two together because when I watch tape, I think Eric would admit to you he's made some mistakes, and so has Kendrick, but they've both done really, really good things, and they're both athletes. I just think we're dealing with like the really big kindergartner who's really good, but they're still in kindergarten. You can't get them to their senior year of high school right away, as good as they are. And I think that the two guys, in their defense, they want to do everything all at once. They're splendid athletes. Eric is an incredible athlete. And if there's anything, it's like going too fast. It's like my dad used to tell me all the time, and it drove me crazy working on the farm. Go fast, but don't hurry. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, okay, what does that mean? You know, I'm screwing up here. Go fast, but don't hurry. And it's a little bit that, I think, with Eric. And I think over time, I lose no sleep over that, Saran. Zero sleep. Because those two guys can both play. But they're both rookies. And I think you touched on it. There's just going to be times when they're going to be rookies. And as the game slows down, and maybe they even slow down a scooch, just a scooch, because they play fast, I just don't think you're going to see as many mistakes. And I mean, there's a couple times. I don't know. I want to ask about the Cleveland game, because there are times you're going to have 10 guys in gaps, and you're trusting your corner to play one-on-one. You don't always have a safety back. You don't always. And I don't know if that was Carr's play to play him man all over the field.
And you know what, Mitch? Sometimes the other team, they make a play. You know, they get paid millions of dollars, too. You know, I know we never see that as fans of our own team. It's always who on our team screwed up. Well, sometimes nobody screwed up. It's the other team. They got guys who can play, too.
Yeah, I think myopic is the term we could use there. But the point to be made, you asked me the question about Eric. I don't worry about it. I think he's a heck of a player, and he's just going to get better, both against the run and against the pass, and he's got to work in concert with Kendrick as those two will grow together, in my opinion.
Yeah. Mitch, hey, great stuff. As always, time for our final four quickies. You
Only
ready?
If I can give you my final four to you.
Yeah, you want to go first or second?
I'll go second.
All right, here we go. First of all, who leads this team in rushing?
At the end of the season?
Mm-hmm.
Jamal Charles.
Okay, J. Charles. Who is second on the team in sacks?
Second on the team in sacks.
First, we're assuming it's Tamba Haly. You think Gilberry again?
Yep.
You don't
Haly
see
Haly first, Gilberry second.
You know who I kind of like as a sleeper?
Give it to me.
Andy Studebaker.
No, I agree. It depends if he's on the sub package or not.
It does.
In Romeo's, you know, Rolodex, he's in there somewhere, but he's not on all of them.
That's why
it's tricky. I mean, I'm sitting here preparing for these guys going, okay, who's 96? All of a sudden, the Wheaton College guy's in here sacking the quarterback. Now, where did he come from?
Yep.
But he's, you know, he's not all of them. That's what's fun about this defense.
The whole team is tough to prepare for. I agree with you. All right.
Oh, DeMario Williams is coming. Okay, where's he coming from? Okay, gotcha.
What do you do this Sunday?
Belton, Texas.
What is going on in Belton, Texas?
My son is a coach.
Oh, okay.
I coach and teaches in Belton, Texas. I will be at a high school football game Friday night. Belton, Texas against Harker Heights. And Belton's quarterback, he gets to coach him, is committed to the University of Texas. They also have a good wide receiver that's being recruited for Belton. And Harker Heights has got a couple of guys. In fact, the 49ers had a guy from Harker Heights. So, and his wife is an OBGYN, and she's finishing her fourth year of residency at a place called Scott and White in Temple, Texas, which is right there. It's kind of equidistant between Waco and Austin on Interstate 35.
Well, maybe your kids will accomplish something at some point, Mitch.
I'm hoping so. Yeah. My daughter's going to Eastern Europe with the Peace Corps for medical missions. It's like, okay, I hope.
No, I'd already heard that one. I knew that one in the back of my head. Holy cow, man. All right, you got to be a proud father, buddy.
I am, and I'm just so blessed. The Lord has blessed me with an awesome wife who's put up with me. She's a coach, you know.
Yep.
And I got two great kids who were great athletes, great students, and now they're imparting their wisdom to others. I couldn't be happier or more proud.
All right, finally, we're three games in. We're kind of at the quarter pole with the bye week and everything. What's the Chiefs' final record?
And I'm changing it. Where was that before, 9-7?
I think you had them at 2-14 before the season.
No, don't do that, dude. And these never work. You know that with me. Because if I tell you, 8-8, he doesn't believe in us. He doesn't believe. And if I go, hey, they're 14-16-0, they're like, he's a shill. The guy's a shill.
I'd have to get my other notebook. I do always write these down.
Tells it like it is, not this guy.
I do always write these down. I believe you had them at 9-7.
I'm going 10-6. I'm going to hedge it a little bit.
Yeah, I had them at 8-8, and they're one game ahead of my pace, so I think they're at 9-7. I've always said they have
the potential. You're bumping up one game with me. I'm just nudging it up one.
Yeah, but I've always said they have the potential to be 10-6 and win this division.
Okay.
And I think they're right there knocking on that door. They look pretty darn good, there's no doubt. Mitch, great stuff as always.
Wait a minute, my final four.
Oh, that's right. What do you got? Lay it on
your greatest moment, either as an athlete or a fan of Shawnee Mission East High School, what has it been?
My greatest moment as an athlete or fan?
Or a fan of Shawnee Mission East.
I guess as a fan, the basketball team, the biggest thing I can remember was when Rockhurst was number one in the Metro and I think number one in the state of Missouri, a young man by the name of Chris Heller, I believe is now a lawyer, in these parts. 6'11 center that would go on to play at Mizzou came to play.
I remember Chris Heller.
Yes, came to play at Shawnee Mission East, and the Lancers knocked off Rockhurst in their gym. It was quite a big victory, taking out the mighty 6'11 Chris Heller.
The Shawnee Mission East Lancers will or will not win a playoff game in 2010.
Will win a playoff game. They're significantly better, and I got to remember the coach's name. I cannot for the life of me, but he is doing a heck of a job. They will win a playoff game, even though they fell 26-14, I think it was, to Olathe North, but 3-1 and a much, much improved football team. Good quarterback play, solid running attack, solid defense. They will win a game.
Your proudest moment as a Syracuse football fan. Now, I know the basketball answer.
All right.
Three, but football fan, your proudest moment when you said, I am from Syracuse.
Well, could it have been before I actually got there?
Sure. Were you a fan of them then?
Yeah, I was. I mean, they were at school. I was considering, you know, I started thinking about schools when I was in about junior high, and they were one I was considering for a while. And this may have been the one that kind of put them in the front. When they started the 87 season off undefeated, you know, Don McPherson, under coach Dick McPherson, and they played, and Don McPherson should have won the Heisman Trophy that year, by the way. But anyway, they knocked off Penn State in a rout in the Carrier Dome after not ever having done it. If it's once I got there and were officially a part of the program, I was in the big house at Michigan where Syracuse rolled out to a 37-7 lead and would ultimately beat Michigan 37-27, a day that Wolverine fans turned to me and said, you wouldn't have won if we'd have let this schlep Tom Brady sit down and had the real star Drew Henson in the game like we should have. Our coach is a moron. Drew Henson's the real deal. Once we get rid of Brady, we're going to win a national championship.
That's why you read the whole book. You don't write the ending while you're at chapter one.
That story is a fact, and Michigan fans will be reminded of it for all their years if they ever bring up Tom Brady to me.
Final question.
Yes.
The movie about Ernie Davis. Mm-hmm. Help me out. Great movie. I know. What's the name of it?
The movie was called The Express.
The Express. Historically accurate or not? For the most part.
Yes and no.
And is that little goofy stadium still on that campus? Is that shot on location?
Archibald Stadium was torn down. That is now the location of the Carrier Dome, although Archibald Gymnasium is still there and right next to the Carrier Dome, and it's not connected to an even bigger like student activity center where there's a gym and a basket and multiple basketball courts and everything. But Archibald Stadium is no longer there. It was torn down. That's where the Carrier Dome is built, which is built right in the middle of campus, just like that Archibald Stadium was. So it's literally got buildings that are, some of the buildings are 10 feet away from one of the walls of the Carrier Dome, but it is not there. The inaccuracies, I've been told, I wasn't there, but I've been told Texas people are very upset the way they are portrayed in that movie, that if there are any inaccuracies, Texas people will tell you that they were not the raging racists that they are portrayed to be in that movie.
Kind of like the Kentucky, how they were portrayed in the Glory Road.
Yes.
Against UTEP with the rebel flags flying and Nathan
yes.
Bedford Forrest
yes.
coaching the Kentucky Wildcats. No, Adolph Rupp.
Yeah.
Okay, well, there you go. We got that taken care of.
There it is. We solved a lot of problems.
And you're
here today,
saying
Mitchell.
Every time I buy a Carrier heating or air conditioner, I'm paying for your stupid dome.
Well, the dome cost $18 million, and they donated $4 million in 1979, named it the Carrier Dome on that. It was not a naming rights deal. It was a thank you. We will call it the Carrier Dome because the Carrier Corporation, based there in Syracuse, gave the four of the $18 million it took to build the place. The most interesting part about that is that it's called the Carrier Dome, and it has no air conditioning.
So you're saying it's Carrier Dome into perpetuity. What
yeah.
GoDaddy.com.
It is in early September. The first couple of home football games can be a little bit toasty in the dome. The rest of the time, the body heat does most of the work. There are heaters, but the body heat can warm it up. But there is no air conditioning in the Carrier Dome.
But if GoDaddy.com or Google says we want it now to be the Google Dome, they won't just take the $10 million and run with it?
I don't think so. No, I believe that's it. That's its name, and they're sticking with it. But, you know, don't be shocked if tomorrow they're, you know, there's a different name up there. Mitch, always our pleasure, buddy. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Soren.
The Red Zone with Soren Petro will be right back here on KCChiefs.com.
The off-season workouts are complete. Training camp is underway. The new Arrowhead Stadium is ready to make its Monday Night Football debut. The NFL season is near. Will you be there?
great seats are available with tickets to Chiefs games starting at just $30. Single game Chiefs tickets are on sale now at kcchiefs.com, the stadium box office, or via Ticketmaster. Experience the new Arrowhead Stadium and be there when your Chiefs take on the Packers, the Eagles, AFC West rivals the Broncos, Raiders, and Chargers, or the 49ers, Cardinals, Bills, Jags, or Titans. Great seats are available for all games, but won't last long and are subject to availability. Don't wait. Get your single game Chiefs tickets now at kcchiefs.com, the stadium box office, or any Ticketmaster location. The new Arrowhead. New body. Same soul. Big 12 college football action returns to Kansas City in 2010. Tickets are on sale now to see the Kansas State Wildcats take on the Iowa State Cyclones Saturday, September 18th at the new Arrowhead Stadium. The 2009 battle at Arrowhead featured the Wildcats blocking the Cyclones' game-tying extra point with 32 seconds left to preserve the one-point victory. Tickets start at just $20 and are available at the new Arrowhead Stadium box office, Ticketmaster.com, or any Ticketmaster outlet. Head coach Paul Rhodes and his Cyclones look to start the Big 12 conference season off right as they face off against the Wildcats and head coach Bill Snyder for the second year in a row at Arrowhead Stadium. Great seats are available in all levels and start at only $20. Get your tickets now at the new Arrowhead Stadium box office, Ticketmaster.com, or any Ticketmaster outlet. It's the K-State Wildcats and Iowa State Cyclones when Big 12 college football returns to the new Arrowhead Stadium Saturday, September 18th.
Hey, Chiefs fans, I'm Josh Looney of KCChiefs.com.
And I am the Internet. Great to be here, Josh.
We're here to tell you about all the new and exciting things going on at KCChiefs.com.
I usually don't endorse websites, but KCChiefs.com is legit.
I know. At KCChiefs.com, you can check out my daily blog, exclusive video content, see what's going on with the team, learn about the Chiefs cheerleaders, and much more.
Yeah, buddy.
That's not all. You can also interact with other fans in Chiefs 365. Chiefs 365 is the place for Chiefs fans to interact, give feedback, and be connected with everything Chiefs.
Fan feedback? That is awesome. But Josh, I really want to buy a jersey.
At KCChiefs.com, you can do that too. The Chiefs Pro Shop is the best place on the web. Buy all of your favorite Chiefs gear, gifts, and much more.
Whoa, system overload.
You want the Chiefs? Go to the Chiefs at KCChiefs.com.
Are you looking for that perfect gift? Maybe it's a birthday, a holiday, or just looking for something special for that extra special Chiefs fan in your life? Well, we have it. The 2010 Chiefs Cheerleader Swimsuit Calendar is now available at KCChiefs.com. This 16-month calendar features the entire Chiefs cheerleader squad in swimsuits shot in Red Hot Jamaica. Get your hands on the 16-month 2010 Chiefs Cheerleader Swimsuit Calendar online at the Chiefs Pro Shop at kcchiefs.com.
Now, let's get back into the Red Zone with Soren Petro, exclusively on kcchiefs.com.
All right, welcome back. Wrapping things up here in the Red Zone at kcchiefs.com. Soren Petro with you. Our thanks to Mitch Holt. This great stuff with Mitch. We're running late today, but want to get to one of your emails. Our man Daryl from the Great White North, our best emailer out there, giving us an email about the Chiefs' chances, which I saw your earlier email, Daryl. Daryl kind of worried about the offense of the Chiefs going into the Niner game, feeling a lot better about it coming out. And a pat on the back for Romeo Crennel, Daryl says. It's been painful the last few seasons to see teams score on the Chiefs defense with the huge holes. It's not much good to score 36 points if you're going to give up 37. It's been a lot more fun to watch the way the Chiefs played this year. I know they need to pick things up on offense, but so what if they're sputtering on offense if you're going to have a defense like this? The running game is working and we are winning games, and it's been a treat to see the defensive stands. Just think back to the 2000 Raven team. We'll get maybe a little cautious there. But as we said with Mitch, they are number 6 against the run. They are number 2 in points allowed defensively, number 13 overall in defense. Some good numbers, some good statistics so far by this defense. He said, how are we measuring up defensively? What are the stats through 3 games? And they are exactly that. Number 2 in points allowed, number 13 overall, number 6 rushing defense. It's in the passing defense, and that's part of the equation. You give up more passing yards when you got a team down, they're going to pile up those passing numbers and stay away from the run. It probably waters down your run defensive statistics as well. Offensively, by the way, the Chiefs 17th overall, 11th in scoring offense. So the offense doing great things. And number one, running the football. There is a night and day difference between the defense last year and this year. The offense making serious progress as well. If they keep it up, as we said earlier, to start things off here in the red zone, 75% of the teams that start 3-0 make their way to the playoffs. Chiefs will get some much-needed rest this week. One more day of practice. They're done today. They'll practice tomorrow on Thursday. Then they've got Friday, Saturday, Sunday off before they get back to work, getting ready for the Indianapolis Colts. All right, enjoy that week off, folks. Sit back, relax, watch you some football. Watch the Colts game. Find a way to watch the Colts game and do some scouting. Let's see what we got here. The Chiefs and Colts next up on the road, then the Chiefs and the Texans after that. It's a tough stretch, but the Chiefs go into it at 3-0. Good times for the Kansas City Chiefs. So for Brad Young, Adam Pellegrino, and Curtis Siebold, this is Seren Petro saying thank you very much for joining us here in the Red Zone.
You've been listening to the Red Zone with Seren Petro. Join us again next week for more discussion of your Kansas City Chiefs. This has been an exclusive presentation of KCChiefs.com.